Good afternoon. You're listening to County Conversations, a podcast brought to you by the New York State Association of Counties. My name is Dave Lucas, NYSOC's Director of Finance and Intergovernmental Affairs. We're joined today by Karen Weber, a partner at the Bonadale Group, to discuss fraud prevention practices. Karen, I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks so much, Dave. Glad to be here.
Fraud's a pretty broad area. So are we going to talk about something in particular today or...
Yeah, absolutely. So we started this discussion because we were talking about payroll fraud. We had had a client with a unique payroll fraud situation, and that prompted discussion, you know, about this particular area. So what is payroll fraud? It's really any way someone in your organization uses payroll to take money. And the people who commit it could be any employee. And frequently, it's the employees who are working directly with the payroll function. Could be somebody in accounting, could be somebody in HR.
So what are some of the procedures you could put in place to monitor this and really to prevent it?
Yeah. So the procedures that we'll put in place, I guess I can go kind of backward and start thinking about how that fraud happens. So an employee, for example, might commit payroll fraud by claiming false time. Right? They put in more hours than they actually work. Or what we've seen in medical practices is perhaps that they claim stipend hours or something for a higher rate, or they're recording hours that they didn't even work at all, or that they worked from home. There's also something we call like friendly swiping, right? Where you have a friend who uses or swipes your time card to show that you were in the office when you actually weren't. So that's claiming false time. Internally, if somebody who runs your payroll, you could have a situation where they've altered wages, right? Somebody's putting in a wage rate even for themselves or for a friend that's a little bit higher than their normal rate, resulting, of course, in higher pay. In the medical profession, we might see a lot of false billing that carries its own, you know, issues and reporting requirements. Also, there's a scheme called ghost employees, and that happens when someone in the payroll department creates a fictitious employee and sends a paycheck to that fictitious employee. A way that you can check for that is getting a printout of your employees and seeing if any of the addresses are the same. Now, you may have married individuals, you may have siblings or something like that, and a shared address makes sense, but sometimes it could be a fictitious employee. Same thing on the bank account side. If you're looking at your direct deposit accounts, do you see two of the same accounts receiving paychecks? So that's a way to protect against or to look for and identify ghost employees. Another form of fraud that comes through on the payroll side is fraudulent expense reimbursement. So someone's submitting reimbursement for expenses that didn't exist or for expenses that were incurred personally and not for the benefit of the organization. Another thing that falls under payroll fraud is fake injuries for workers' compensation claims, right? Workers' compensation falls under the payroll umbrella. But really, that claiming false time, altering wages, ghost employees, and fraudulent expense reimbursement are where we see a lot of the fraud day to day. Now, on the prevention side, or the way that you could detect it, happens in the review function. And actually, I just put a post on LinkedIn a couple weeks ago about this. Whoever's responsible for reviewing the payroll register each week or every 2 weeks, however often it's issued, should be looking at the total check count, right? There should never be a situation where you're issuing more checks than you actually have employees, right? That means somebody's getting extra checks. You should be looking at the current gross wages as compared to the prior period, right? What's the variation? You might know that somebody, perhaps an hourly person, worked longer this period than last period, and you can justify that change. Usually expense reimbursement flows through payroll as well, and you would be looking from period to period, how did that change? And is total payroll, does total payroll make sense as compared to budget? If it's higher, is that because you stepped up hours, because you're busier, or is that because somebody is committing fraud and getting paid a little extra? Like I said earlier, that periodic review of employee data, are there any shared addresses? Are there shared bank accounts? Is a good way to catch something like ghost employees. And I think it's really important for agencies that are listening in is make sure you have managers sign off on the review. If someone is charged with a review of the payroll register, do they sign off on it? Even if it's filling out a form, putting their initials in the corner, so that way you've got someone to hold accountable when something like this happens. But you looked at this, what were your payroll procedures? One of my favorite ways for detecting something like ghost employees is handing out physical checks. So somebody could, in a random payroll, decide, we're not going to run direct deposit this month. We're going to hand out physical checks. And the manager walks around handing out these checks. If there's a check for somebody that you're not able to find, that might be a ghost employee situation. So obviously, that's kind of a heavy lift on the management department, but it is something to think about for putting a control in place. Well, so those are some of my prevention and detection tactics.
So I've heard of something called check washing, and it sounds, what exactly is that? What happens in that situation? And is there a special thing you can do in that to prevent something like that from happening?
Oh yeah. So this is really tough. Actually, this is something that could happen to anybody regardless. And I think a lot of us saw in the news last year, there was just a rash of check washing schemes. Actually, my parents were the victim of one where, you know, they're still mailing physical copy payments, you know, checks in the mail. Someone either pulls it out of the mail system or out of a mailbox, intercepts it somehow along the way. It could be somebody in your mailroom, right? It never winds up in the mail system. It's somebody in the mailroom that takes it. And what they do is they remove the ink for the payee, and they may put their own name or an entity that they own. And instead of that check going to, say, the utilities department where it was intended, it goes to that individual. Now, you wouldn't necessarily catch this in your own checkbook, right? Because you know you wrote a check to the utility company and you see that check cleared, at least maybe in your online banking, so you don't catch it. It's really only when the utility company sends their statement the following month and says that you didn't make a payment last month. So we had a situation where a client had check washing happen on the payroll side. They distribute physical checks, and it was not actually an employee. It was a like sibling, I believe, of the employee. Saw the check lying on the counter within the home, removed the name of the individual that the wages were for, and put in their own name and deposited it. And somebody got the idea, you know, shared it around, and they were, this organization was a repeat victim of this check washing. So that's how it happens.
So I'm assuming, like, clearly direct deposit would be the best way to get around that. But what if there's situations where the person doesn't have a bank account or direct deposit, or it can't work? What do you do in a circumstance like that?
A lot of organizations are switching to pay cards. So you can deposit wages on like a prepaid debit card, and then the individual can use it. And that's where ultimately this organization went. They can't mandate direct deposit, right? Maybe they have some unbanked individuals, but they can pay wages on a debit card. Downside of that, of course, is that if they lose the debit card, there's a replacement fee, you know, for you to go back and replace it. This debit card can be stolen more easily than, you know, a copy of a check. So there's no foolproof way other than direct deposit to ensure your payroll wages get to where they need to go.
Is there special training you can do as well for not just the payroll staff, but the managers?
Oh my gosh, totally. So this is, you know, far and wide, all of the agencies within or all of the departments within your organization should have anti-fraud training. Knowing, or at least the perception of being watched, is a huge deterrent to fraud in your organization. So you may say to the employees that we have all of the, you know, in the anti-fraud training, that we have all of these procedures in place, and it will catch these forms of fraud, so don't commit it. And beyond that, we have a zero tolerance. We have zero tolerance for fraud, meaning that if we catch you, you will be fired. And even better, if we catch you, we're going to report it to the authorities. And so having that policy in place, zero tolerance, the oversight, and communicating it to your employees is a great deterrent for fraud.
Thank you for that information. It's usually you're looking from the outside for somebody trying to get in, and this is kind of making sure the inside's clean as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Very important.
You know, in a lot of our trainings, and actually at the finance school this week, where we'll talk about the fraud triangle, and it's something that in every department you should be thinking about. For someone to commit fraud, there has to be the opportunity, right? That opportunity to swipe that card without oversight or adjust the wages because nobody's looking. There also has to be pressure. And Donald Cressy was a social researcher. He came up with this theory, and he said that usually perpetrators of fraud are influenced by some outside pressure, usually financial, that they can't get or are too ashamed to get help for. It's easier to steal money to cover their tracks or to solve their problem than it is to raise their hand and say, I have a problem, I can't make, you know, my bills next week. But the third piece is rationalization or justification. You know, if they can get to the point where they feel like they deserve this money or they're not paid enough, it's easier for them to make the leap and commit that fraud. So you as an organization have a duty to be monitoring your employees and to set tone at the top of integrity, you know, that you don't tolerate fraud, that you want people comfortable, you pay them fair wages, you make them work fair hours, and minimize those pressures as much as possible. Employee assistance programs, EAP programs, are also very helpful to reduce that pressure. It's somewhere that employees have to, a place for employees to go when they feel pressure and need help. And that's something that the organization can provide to prevent fraud against itself. I think we don't think about EAP programs in that way, but they're certainly there for that reason.
Great. Is there anything else you wanted to close with today?
Thank you so much for having me. You know, we see these cases all the time. If it's not payroll, it'll be somewhere else. And if you ever have a question on the fraud side, don't hesitate to reach out to me at Bonadio, kweber@bonadio.com.
Thank you so much today, Karen, for giving us this very good advice and procedural things that we should be looking for in the payroll
Absolutely.
World.
Thanks so much, Dave. Happy to be here.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of County Conversations, a podcast brought to you by the New York State Association of Counties. Local government is at the heart of New York State, and NYSAC is proud to present this podcast as the unified voice of county government. We appreciate your time and attention and encourage you to subscribe to stay up to date.